Okay. Hi. Hi,
Hi.
everyone.
Hi. Hello.
If you're tuning in, get ready because we are still on our hiatus and we are coming back the first week of January, but we want you to stay subscribed. So we're recasting some of our favorite episodes of season 11. Tessa, do you have anything you want to share with everybody?
I'm sorry. What do I want to share? Well, folks, it's been like a November to remember. And I hope you all are doing well. And yeah, like Rosie said, stay tuned because we've got some really good shit coming out in January.
Oh, she said it. And it's true. And if you're a little curious, look, we, Tessa and I, have both been going through a lot of changes, physically, emotionally, spiritually, everything in between. And we're so excited to bring you this new and revamped content the first week of January. So stay tuned, enjoy this episode, and we'll see you back really soon.
Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, your host and guide on this journey to self-discovery and radical love. I've walked a path filled with challenges. Growing up in East LA during the 92 LA riots, it left me searching for meaning, for mentors, for a way to truly understand the purpose of life. But you know what I found? The power of conversation. So I decided to create a space where we can share these conversations with you, our community. And that's how the Radically Loved podcast was born. Join me as we dive into topics like mindfulness, spirituality, self-love, and the keys to overall healthy living. I'm joined by my dear friend, fellow author, producer, and teacher, Tessa Tovar.
Hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm grateful to be part of this community because it teaches me so much about what it means to be human. Ever since I was a little one, I was always asking the deeper questions in life. Why are we here? What happens when we are gone? What is the purpose of life? I love this show because I get to ask the questions that cut right to the meaning of life. I've learned that no matter how much we want the path to be clear, it never is. And that is actually part of the beauty that creates a radically loved life.
Please do us a favor, share the episodes you love with your friends and leave us a review. Together, we'll learn how to create a life that's truly, deeply, radically loved. Let's begin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Radically Loved podcast. We are so excited to be here today. We're always excited to be here today.
Super excited.
Always, right? Super excited. But we do have a very special guest. Raquel Reichard is joining us on the show. She recently wrote an amazing book called Self-Care for Latinas. And she is also an award-winning journalist and editor whose work has appeared in many publications such as the New York Times, Refinery 29, Cosmopolitan, Well and Good, Teen Vogue, and other major news and lifestyle outlets. She's based in Orlando, Florida. Her writing and reporting covers Latin body politics, culture, and music, exploring themes of wellness, bodily autonomy, colonialism, and diasporic belonging. So without further ado, here is our conversation with Raquel. Please enjoy.
Caution into the wind.
La la la.
Yep, it says actual recording is higher quality. That's great.
I want to keep that in.
It's so true, though. I mean, true words have never been said.
I mean, I feel like we've really come a long way since the tech of 2020 when we were all online.
Oh my God.
24/7, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, do you remember the Zoom sessions? Raquel, what was it like for you having to navigate all the Zooms? Did you get Zoom fatigue?
Like, I've been working remotely since like 2018. So like everyone was talking about Zoom fatigue and ready to get back. I was like, this is my norm.
So you already had you had the jump on all of us.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Were you using Zoom?
What happens when you live in Orlando?
That was kind of like, Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. No one else is here. Not in the industry, at least.
Oh, I see. Well, so I want to talk about your book, Self-Care for Latinas. Thank you for writing it. It's such a beautiful book. I just was curious what inspired you to put it together and put it out there in the world in the first place.
Yeah. So this, it's a pretty non-traditional path to book publishing overall, and especially to this book. So this is a title that it's common at the publishing house, right? So Adams Media, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster. And so they have a Self-Care for Black Women, Self-Care for Black Men. And they were looking for someone to write a book for this audience, right? For this demographic. And they reached out to a few Latina writers. I was one, asked us sort of our approach, like how would, you know, what would a table of contents look like? They wanted to sort of see our style, our voice. And they really liked my vision for the book. And so they went with me. We signed a contract in February. I started writing it in March. The manuscript was due in June. So it was 3 months, like bizarre. And then it published the same year, in December. Like I said, unheard of, very non-traditional. But I will say, you know, the reason why they reached out to me is because I have centered this sort of work throughout my journalistic career. I've been a journalist for the past 10 years, and I have always centered issues like body politics, issues like diasporic belonging, and Latina identity and culture and wellness, right? And so this really feels like so much of my work together in this book that's been so well received.
First of all, congratulations on writing a book in that short amount of time. Well, that is like, it is, you deserve an award. I know you're an award-winning journalist, but this is like a bigger award. I think you deserve a bigger award because this is, people don't realize how big of a feat it is to write a book. And I think, you know, obviously you having the experience as a journalist for as long as you have, it I'm sure it helped. But still, it's a big undertaking though, right? It is different than writing an article. It's way more in depth. And so it's very admirable, and I'm so curious, like, what in your journey of being a journalist and writing about these really important topics, especially in the world that we're in now, where I feel like mental health has become such a prevalent thing that's discussed because so many people are suffering and struggling. I'm curious for you, like, what's been your process and what have you learned in writing this book about self-care? How does it affect our mental wellness, and specifically for the Latin community as a whole, you know, both men and women? In my experience being Hispanic, it wasn't ever anything that we discussed, right? Like, we didn't talk about mental health. We didn't talk about any of that stuff, right? No. So I'm curious, in your experience in the fields that you're in, what have been your findings? And what do you think is one of the most important things that we can focus on right now?
Oh, okay. Big question. I have so many thoughts. So to start, I think that how I start the book, so the way the book is set up, you know, it has an introduction and then it goes into mind, body, and spirit. And in each section, there are takeaways, right? There are tools, techniques, and exercises, self-care, tools, techniques, and exercises. But there's also context, right? So, you know, context that explores sort of the cultural, political, social, and just very personal experiences that make us unwell, right, to begin with, right? I don't think we can have a conversation around self-care if we're not also addressing the things that make us unwell. And so the way the book starts with the mind, and I was really intentional about the sort of the takeaways that were at the start of that section, right? And so I start with destigmatizing mental health because, you know, as you just said, you know, mental health is still very much stigmatized within the community. I think that we have made strides, and this is actually something I think, Rosie, you and I have talked about when I interviewed you, however long ago that was. But these, their stigmas, while we've made like advances in the community, in large part thanks to like, you know, sort of our generation, right? The younger generation who has been open about their struggles with mental health, who have been open about seeking, you know, going to therapy and seeking mental health care, and how that sort of that representation has helped, you know, the old, you know, our older generation, our elders, to also have an open mind. There's still stigma that exists, right? So we need to start there, and then in addition to that, we need to release the sort of guilt that comes with self-care, right? I think within our community, especially among, you know, first, second generation Latinas, who watched our elders, our parents, our grandparents, our caretakers toil day and night, you know, 7 days a week for some, the idea that we can and should rest comes with a sense of shame, right? Because we think if they weren't, you know, given the opportunity to rest, then how dare I, yeah. Right? So it's like unlearning that sort of guilt that comes with taking care of ourselves and understanding that we are deserving of that. And not only are we deserving of that, but us being able to pour into ourselves also gives our elders permission to do the same and also creates a new reality for the next generation, right? And then unlearning this culture of Marianismo. I think that, you know, as Latinas, we're pretty familiar with the term machismo, right? This sort of toxic masculinity. Yeah. But we're less aware of the word Marianismo, right? And I think that's intentional, right? Because Marianismo, machismo can't exist without Marianismo and vice versa, right? And Marianismo, for those who aren't aware, is this gender role script placed on Latinas that tell us that we must be submissive, that we must be modest, and that we must be self-sacrificial. Right. So how many of us grow up watching our mothers, our abuelitas give themselves entirely to their families, to the point where there's nothing left for them, right? To their spouses, to their children, to their churches, right? To the point that they're depleted, right? And so in my book, I ask, who does your self-immolation serve? It doesn't serve you, and it also doesn't serve us, because what happens when you work yourself ill, right? And so I think as a culture, we have to start there. We have to address those issues, because how can we even have a conversation about self-care if we feel a sense of guilt around it, if we feel a stigma around it, or if we've been taught our entire lives that we must be self-sacrificial, right? It's like the thought of self-care is like unfathomable, right? But I will say, for me personally, in writing this book, I think the biggest lesson I learned was actually that we need to be, that self-care shifts over time, right? And so for instance, I will share this anecdote. When I was working on this book, when I was writing this book, I was deep in grief, after the loss of my best friend. And, in many ways, writing this book helped me prioritize self-care again, but it showed me that the way in which I self-care needed to change, right? Because I was no longer the same person, right? So the tools and techniques that used to work for me when my best friend was alive were no longer filling me in the same way, were no longer, bringing me back to life, right? Were no longer nourishing me. And so I had to adopt new tools for the new person that I was. And like, this is something that I want all of my readers to take away when they read this book, is that, you know, there are 105 tools and techniques here, right? I don't expect everyone to follow each and every one of them. And I don't expect them to work for everyone in the same way, right? Self-care is not one size fits all. And so what I do say, though, is take what works for you. And instead of throwing the rest away, put it sort of in a like a mental bookshelf so that you can return to it should you need to, right? Because we are all ever evolving, ever growing, ever transforming. And, you know, as was the case for me, what might work for you today may not tomorrow. And so we need tools to work for us in every stage of our lives.
I love that, Raquel. Thank you. I'm so glad you're touching on the subject of, well, it seems like one of the big main misconceptions about self-care is that it's portrayed as like this luxury rather than a necessity. And there's a tremendous amount of shame and guilt around it when we take care of ourselves. And I think in particularly, and I see this when I look at my mother-in-law, well, she passed away during COVID, but I mean, I think it was that example exactly. She gave her entire life to her kids and her family. Thank you. And she just was exhausted and she couldn't recover. Yeah. But I see my sister-in-law doing the same thing. She works so hard and she does, bless her heart, still have a fun life. You know, she makes time for her friends and family and goes out and does stuff, but I don't see her sleep that much. And so I always, when I was first introduced into this family, I always kind of held the women up on a pedestal. And I'm realizing that as you're talking, and I think I realized it before, but it was always like, oh, they do all the things and they do it so well. And I never really stopped to think, but to what detriment are they putting themselves, their health, their mental health, their well-being into? So I really appreciate this conversation. And I guess I'm wondering if, you know, I've always been kind of like the hip, quote unquote, hippy dippy woo woo child in the family, especially when it comes to my Mexican side of the family. So when I show up and I'm like, let me do some Reiki, let's have a meditation, they all kind of go, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, you know, like, if there's what you would suggest around having this conversation with my family about the importance of self-care and helping it be less of a taboo topic and less shame-based.
Yep, absolutely. The way this book is set up, right? So there are, I think, the more traditional, you know, examples of, you know, self-care techniques, right? Like breathing exercises, like stretching. But there are some that feel very culturally relevant, right? So I think after having this conversation around Marianismo, around the stigma of mental health, around the guilt, around even, you know, the eldest daughter trope, right? That so many of us know very well. I think we can also talk about and highlight the ways that, you know, our cultures and our people have been pouring into themselves throughout history, right? I think that we also should highlight what has been termed, right, abuelita knowledge, right? Our, you know, abuelita's relationship with plant medicine, right? With knowing exactly what sopita to make or what tea to make for us, you know, when we are feeling ill, right? I think that there are so many things that I think that we already do as a culture and as a people that we don't recognize as self-care, right? So spending time with loved ones, phoning a friend for validation, when we're feeling nostalgic and we want to like make abuelas or our mothers, like, favorite dish, speaking with loved ones abroad, right? Like maintaining those relationships, traveling to our homeland, right? Like not just using our vacation to go some, you know, to a place we've never been to before, but to explore our own homeland and spend, you know, spend that time learning about our familial, you know, roots.
I love what you're saying about the going to visit your like homeland or where you're from. Like anytime I've traveled to Mexico, like there's, I can't even explain it. Like there's just this feeling that I have, like when I'm there, it just feels so familiar. Like it feels like I'm home. It feels like there's this like deep connection, and it really is so beautiful to just go see where you come from, right? In your lineage. I think that there's something really beautiful and really nourishing about that.
It's spiritual self-care.
Right. And that's the thing. I think that I feel like that was the one thing that my family did really well, right? Growing up in a Hispanic household, it was like spiritual self-care was like in it. We were going to church. I was doing my catechism. I was raised in a Catholic household. So we were going to church. We're doing the, you know, rosarios every week, you know, and it was just like really full in that aspect, but it was the Marianismo that you were talking about earlier, that was one of the biggest downfalls, I think, for the women, particularly on my father's side of the family, because, you know, it's just like working so hard to no avail. And like my grandma waking up at 4 a.m. to start making meals and taking care of us and cleaning the house. And, you know, then it was my aunt, same thing. And then when she had kids, she's making food and taking them to school and like doing all of the things in her health. You know, she's got asthma. She's, you know, has, you know, chronic illness. And you start to see the detrimental effect that not practicing physical self-care takes on a person, you know, that's just doing this thing because it's like, no, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, right? I'm in this role. And this is what my job is. So can you speak to that a little bit in terms of like, how do we even address this concept of Marianismo? And how do we begin to sort of address it in a way that's not degrading to people, but in a way that's constructive and allows us to have a more open conversation about, you know, these types of roles in our lives?
Yeah. It's delicate, right? It's delicate, right? Because especially as the younger person, you know, under, right, a culture of Marianismo, right, that teaches you that the part of woman's role is also silence, right? So by using your voice, you're challenging that. And, you know, both, I think our elders, regardless of their gender, can sometimes feel a sense of fear around systems and culture that they know being challenged, right? And so I think that you do have to be really careful with how you, you know, bring up these conversations and have them from a place of love and not sort of a, I know better than you, listen to, you know, what I'm saying. Yeah. And you are, you know, you are such a victim and you don't even realize it, right? Because also I think a lot of our elders, you know, feel like they do these things for their children and their families out of love, right? And that's a beautiful thing, right?
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, as I said, it's really sensitive, it's really delicate. And I think that the most effective form of education comes from personal transformation, right? And having someone witness the freedom, the love, the joy that you are experiencing when you free yourself from this, you know, this culture or ideas, right, that come from Marianismo. And when they witness that and they see that, they are more open to dialogue because they've already seen your, I mean, to put it in religious language, they've seen your testimony, right?
Yeah, they've seen your transformation. Mm-hmm. They've seen you do the work. And so it's easier for them to reconcile any sort of suggestions that you may have. Because there's also that, you know, you got to respect your elders' undertone too. It's like me telling you, the minute I try to tell you how to live your life, I'm being disrespectful.
Disrespectful.
Right? So, yeah. So uh-huh. That's the thing too. That,
sinvergüenza.
That, yeah, exactly. or like, ¿qué te crees? You know, like, yeah. What do you like, who do you think you are? Like, why are you, you know, being disrespectful and telling me how to live my life? Right. So I think it's really kind of a very, you said it very beautifully and articulately. It's a very delicate, and I think it's important for us to be able to, yeah, like show, not tell, essentially. Yep. Right? Right.
There's time when, you know, for that conversation to happen, but I think that folks are more open to that conversation after they witness your transformation and they see you living in your truth and, you know, joyously and freely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love that. I wanted to say that made me think of one thing that I've always just loved and appreciated about the Latin culture is how much reverence there is for our elders and how much we take care of each other as a family. And there's never, to me, in my experience, never been a question of if someone gets sick, if someone grows old and needs help, that we're multi-generational family and household often, and we're always going to be there to take care of each other no matter what. And there's wisdom in age, and we respect that. You're right, it is a delicate balance. And I think it applies to this concept too, because I've seen it on the flip side, growing up in the United States, having a Eastern European background. And in this day and age, it feels like the commonplace thing to do is put our elders in an elder care facility, mm-hmm. not take them into our homes when they need help. So that's just one thing that I'm always like, oh, I just want that to be part of my family's experience. And I want that to be passed down generation after generation. So it is a fine line.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a fine line. It is very delicate. There's, you know, for me, self-care is intrinsically tied to community care, right? Mm-hmm. When I think of my sort of self-care sheroes, right? I'm thinking of Gloria Anzaldúa, who once said, I change myself, I change the world. I think of course, Audre Lorde, who, you know, talked about self-care as, political warfare, right? And so for them and for, you know, the women in, you know, our community, it's always been tied to community care, right? Because how well can I actually be if the people around me, the people who I love, are struggling, right? That's not sustainable for me, because my heart, you know, breaks for the people that I love, right? And at the same time, while self-care is very much tied to community care, also community care is tied to self-care, right? And so I can't mm-hmm. lose myself entirely in helping everyone around me. I have to pour into myself as well.
Yeah. It's the and both of that I love so much. It's not one or the other. It's and exactly. both. I could just sit here and talk with you all day, Raquel. I don't want to let you go, but I was curious, you know, writing this book, putting this all down on paper, is there a central message or a theme or maybe one takeaway that you hope readers would walk away with?
Yes, 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 yes. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but, you know, I think with self-care, it's been a term that's really been commercialized, right? We have this idea of self-care as, you know, $20 smoothies, $100 moisturizers, faraway retreats, you know, that we dream of but can't actually afford, right? And so that makes self-care seem inaccessible and, you know, inaccessible. Like those things are very inaccessible to most of us, myself included. But that's not self-care, right? My definition of self-care is learning the language of your mind, body, and spirit and heeding its calls, right? Our bodies are extremely intelligent, right? They, you know, our bodies are constantly communicating to us exactly what it needs from us, right? Whether that be rest, whether that be water, whether that be time in nature, whether that be laughter, right? And so the problem is that it's a foreign language to a lot of us. We haven't been taught this language. And so I think for me, step one is learning the language of your mind, body, and spirit so that we can heed its calls. Because like I said earlier, self-care isn't one size fits all. We're all very different people. We live very different lives. We, you know, carry very different traumas, right? And so what I need as self-care could look very different from what Rosie needs, right? From what Tessa needs, right? And so I need to be able to sort of decode the language of my mind. You know, I need to decode the messages that my mind, body, and spirit are, you know, transmitting to me.
Yeah.
We can do that through, you know, through body scans, right? Through simply noticing, right? Noticing how we feel when we're hungry, noticing how we feel when we're sad, noticing how we feel when we're excited, noticing how we feel after a workout, right? That is how we can sort of learn this language and better listen
and
to
it. And I love that too, just to add to what you're saying, Raquel, it's like observing our tendencies when we aren't feeling our best or when mm-hmm. we are in those need, when we're in need of self-care, what are our tendencies? Yep. Where do we go? Do we reach for our phones to scroll? Do we reach for that, you know, not the best, healthiest snack? Do we reach for the remote control? Like, I think those are all intertwined with, yep. with this whole, you know, experience. It's like really to practice self-care is to practice getting to know yourself as well, right? To really understanding mm-hmm. who you are, what your needs are. And like you said, it's not going to look the same for everybody. It's not one size fits all. And I think that, you know, you really said it so beautifully, you know, to essentially be able to respect that within yourself, like respect where you're coming from and what your experiences are, and being able to facilitate a system of self-care that works for you, yeah. right?
Yeah.
I love that, Rosie. I wanted to just, anytime I talk about that kind of concept with myself or with my students, I always want to add, when we're starting to do that work of noticing if it's new to us, try to remember not to judge yourself when you catch yourself in the act of yeah. scrolling oh. or whatever habit or behavior mm-hmm. it is yes. that is quote unquote undesirable to you.
Right.
Try to come at it with a sense of compassion. And absolutely. When you do that noticing, it's like, oh, there I go again.
Yeah.
What do I need right now?
And sometimes yeah. what it is that we need is that distraction, right? When I yeah, was, totally. You know, depending on what it is you're going through, right? When I was, you know, in early grief after the loss of my best friend, I needed to be distracted. Like that mm-hmm. is what I needed for my survival, right? So just also being aware of that too. Like I am choosing to distract myself in this way. And yeah. I understand I can't do this long-term, but this is what I need in this moment. And that's okay.
Oh yeah. There's so much wisdom in that. Oh, I love it. Where can people go to connect with you and read more of your good work and hang out with you on the socials?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Raquel Reichard, RAQUELREICHARD. I am the deputy director at Refinery 29 Somos, so you can see some of my work there or on my website at www.raquelreichard.com.
Thank you so much, Raquel. It's been such a pleasure thank having you. You on the podcast. We love your
thank
work.
Thank you. This was so yeah, great.
Thank you so much for being here. You're the best. We'll put all of those links in the show notes. So wherever you're listening or if you're watching this on YouTube, the links to connect with Raquel will be in the description. So don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you all so much for listening and for being here. Hey, friends. Thank you so much for listening to the Radically Love podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. Also, don't forget to check out the Mindful Love Hub on Substack. This episode was produced by Tessa Tovar, music by DJ Taz Rashid.